Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Flourish Together's Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. Can you believe it's episode 7 already? I'm Nicola Torkington, one of the co-founders of Flourish Together. We're an organisation that helps women changemakers like you to flourish. And we've got a new voice on the podcast.
Hi, I'm Rana Kadiri and I'm one of the directors of Flourish Together. I've been involved with the team for several years and it's been an amazing journey. I started off as a volunteer helping out at peer learning events, and it's a real privilege now to be on board as a director and to take part in this month's podcast. So, in this episode, we're talking health and wellbeing in challenging times. Now, we're making and recording this podcast during lockdown, and it's actually our very first remotely recorded podcast episode. Most of you will be listening during a time that's vastly different to anything that we've experienced before. So we wanted to make this specific episode to help make you more aware of some of the amazing women leading social change, come what may. And finally, we know self-care is so important, especially in the current situation. So we'll also share a range of health and wellbeing tips from women working in the sector.
Coming up in this bumper-sized episode, we speak to Natasha Anand Bujahawan from Your Earth Clinic, who tells us about how struggles with her own health helped her to carve a new career. We hope you'll be totally inspired with Flourish Talks, where four women who run health and wellbeing social enterprises give you their tips for staying healthy during challenging times. But first, we virtually gathered a bunch of organisations who work, live or study in Salford to talk about how their work is boosting health and wellbeing of their communities. Here's part one of that conversation. So here we are today. We've invited a number of people from around the Salford area, or people who are impacting the Salford area, to come and have a chat with us about who they are, what they're doing, and tell us more about health and wellbeing businesses that have been supported in creating social change in and around that area. I'm going to ask the ladies to introduce themselves in a moment, but first of all, I just want to say thank you for giving up some time, albeit we're on lockdown, the things that we squeeze in whilst we're on lockdown. Just wanted to first of all thank you, and we'll make a start in finding out who's who. So I might come to you first, Heather.
So I'm Heather Henry. I've done quite a lot of work in Salford. I'm an independent public health nurse. I've been independent for 9 years, and I focus on wellbeing and particularly addressing health inequalities. I've particularly been focusing on children's asthma, and I set up a community interest company called Breath Champs CIC just 2 months ago.
So I've got a lot of experience there through your own career, really, and your own life experience as well. So, no, that's great. It'll be interesting to hear, you know, there's a mix of people who start these ventures as sort of experts by experience, as well as those who are sort of natural born sort of connectors and community developers. So,
hello, my name is Jasmine. I'm a founder and CEO of Women with Wings. The group is based in Little Hooton. What we do, we help and support women to change their lives through starting business or go back to school or go back to work. So we work with different organizations on those sectors. So when we get the women, we help them from the where they are, which stage they are, and we channel that they want to go to improve their lives.
I think Flourish is in a sort of similar boat in that whilst on the outset, it might not immediately look like a health and wellbeing business, around the edges of that, it really is. We might come back to that. I know when we've done some social value reports, it wasn't until we started looking at our social impact that actually we realised health and wellbeing is a massive strand around what we do.
Hi, I'm Kim. I'm the CEO and founder of Visit from the Stalk CIC. We're a social enterprise that's up until now always just been based in Salford. We're officially in Manchester now. And we aim to give parents the tools and resources they need to achieve more for themselves and their family and give their children the best start in life. And we're a support network right from pregnancy through to early childhood and beyond. We give parents the support that they need in whatever form that it is. So in the past, it's been online advice and information. Recently, through our breastfeeding project, there's been one-to-one peer support, face-to-face support. And now during COVID, it's giving out physical items to help their families. So it's really just adapting to whatever families need to give them the best start in life, really.
Brilliant. And I know you're one of the sort of local representatives on the new GMCA Social Enterprise Group. Last but not least, Michaela, I know you don't physically live in Salford, but we've invited you on here because you've been studying at university there for some time. And as part of your studies, a lot of your sort of social enterprise thinking has evolved. So tell us kind of who you are and what you do.
Hi, I'm Michaela. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Awesome. So I'm a student at the University of Salford. I did a biology degree then. I'm now doing a science communication and future media master's. I'm on my final year project, but obviously with everything that's going on, it's not kind of going to plan. So I might be taking an interruption of study and then doing my projects again next year, which is totally fine. You know, people are more important. So basically, most people are not aware of a condition called hidradenitis suppurativa. We call it HS for short, and it has equally unpronounceable names internationally. So the reason I went to do a biology degree is because I wanted to learn about this condition and help others. And then over time, I got a Facebook page after being a member of this international community and just started sharing information. And I just help people in any way I can, be it advice and guidance on who to see, how to get a diagnosis. If they just need support of being put into a group where they can speak to people, I've got ideas with the qualifications that I'm trying to get that I can actually then go on and make my social enterprise HS Action Together actually do more and provide services. That's kind of where I'm at right now.
Brilliant. And like I said, I'll sort of repeat that, you know, we've got to make sure people with sort of lived experience of physical or other sort of health conditions, and, you know, a mix of people who are sort of reacting to what's going on around them as well. And I guess, you know, you've touched on what some of your work seeks to achieve, but, you know, if we're looking at Salford, if we're looking at, you know, the Greater Manchester and the North West, you know, what do we see as being some of the sort of health and wellbeing challenges that we're seeking to tackle, do you think, in this area?
Well, one of the early things that I was involved in was a project called Dadley Does It, which operated in Little Houghton and Rochdale, Langley in Rochdale and Winton in Eccles. And that was set up way back in 2013 with Unlimited Potential, and I was the project manager. The thing that I saw there was that fathers' well-being in difficult circumstances, what our funder called serious multiple disadvantage, was extremely poor, and fathers were quite often invisible within the family as a resource.
You know, we work a lot with women, we talk a lot about women, but family makeup and how the family functions, I guess, is a big part of some of the health and wellbeing challenges that we see. I wonder, Kim, or we'll come to you, Jasmine, in a minute, but you must see a range of health and wellbeing inequalities playing out at the moment.
Obviously, what's come to the point at the minute is the formula milk situation and the complete lack of self-confidence that the parents have got within them. And it's not necessarily the education, it's just they're blind to the marketing and all that stuff around all the companies saying what's best for their children, and them taking that and thinking that they've got to spend thousands of pounds on all the stuff for their chicken for their kids, and just getting themselves into debt.
Motherhood and fatherhood and being part of a family is not something you really taught. It's something you learn along the way, isn't it? And yeah, how we adapt to that and is a big part of what health issues crop up around us and how confident we are to deal with some of that. Jasmine, I know you're working with all sorts of women out around Little Houghton and beyond. Any key health inequalities that you've been seeing around you? And
yes, I will say confidence as well, because I work most with the minority group of people, and all of them, the most important thing that is confidence. And that confidence can come from within them or the people surrounding them. They're not motivated them or help them to be who they are. So even if they come to my contact with me in my group, they are just fired up and say that we've got, I can do this, I can do that. And you can see them, they've got the capability of doing that, but they don't have support surrounding them apart from me coming to my group and socialise with other like-minded women.
And I guess whether we've got transient communities in and around Greater Manchester or whether we've got student populations and others, there are lots of people out there who don't have a support network. Don't have family connections in the way.
That's right. But also what the fathers and mothers in Little Houghton particularly were telling me is that they didn't learn any that their own parents had difficulties with parenting, and yes. fathers in particular have few role models. What they found was they had each other, and they could copy successful behaviours from yeah. each other, mm-hmm. and had somebody to call, somebody to listen to them, and somebody to share their worries with, because men are good at bottling things up. That sort of drove them quite often to the brink.
People hiding things through sense of shame, health and well-being, you know, and emotional yeah. states really does sort of bring that out. I was just going to bring Michaela in perhaps, because obviously you, a lot of the work that you do is around a specific health and well-being challenge.
Well, I found on an international level, not just in Salford, that people with HS are being failed, unfortunately. It's hardly known about with medical professionals. There's no cure, there's no effective treatment. It causes psychological, emotional, physical disabilities. And basically, there's hardly any support. Basically, internationally, people are being failed. I've had this, 26 years now, I've never been offered counselling for it. They've offered me counselling for other things, and I see this not just happening to me, but to other people. And then there's the health inequalities of having to fight to get a diagnosis. The average is 7 years to get a diagnosis. If you're lucky, you know, children, it's harder for them because they consider it to be really, really rare. So them getting a diagnosis is dreadful. You can imagine for years having this condition that causes these wounds in intimate areas that gets misdiagnosed as STDs and skin infections, and it seems to be causing the person psychological damage because they feel it's their fault, the dirty. And this, I don't think there's enough in place anywhere for this.
Yeah. If we perhaps have a think about some practical examples of either how people's lives have been changed or how they've accessed support as a result of our work.
I did a thing as a student a couple of years ago at the Manchester Science Festival. My university, the University of Salford, are the main educational sponsors of the Science Festival. And every year we host a game lab. And they decided to do the Community Science Showcase, which was all about the community and things like that. So my lecturer, Rima Ochu, said, would you like to do something with your community? So we used the power of storytelling, art and science blended together for them to have their own voices to share their stories. And it was a big hit, and we put the stuff on Figshare. So that's great because it's accessible to the academics as well as not just the public. But it meant a lot to the people that participated. It gave them a sense of pride. They felt empowered. They were helping others. And just giving them that voice and that little space, we gave them the power. We didn't say, this is what you have to do. All we had to say was, it can't be graphic. That was it. It actually hit home hard, because I think as well, when you have this condition, you kind of try and separate yourself from it. Does that make sense? Like, I can talk about this all day long, HS, but talk about my story, I get upset, or when I go see the doctor, I get quite upset. It's quite a difficult thing to live with. So when I was reading all these stories that people were sending there, I felt under such pressure to make sure that their voices were heard in how they wanted to be heard. And at the same time, because stress is a trigger, I put myself under that much pressure, I actually was flaring myself up. Mm. So I had to kind of fight and battle to make sure this happened. But to me, it was worth it because it meant a lot to them. So it was great. We've built on that. I've took what they've done to festivals. I've took it to conferences. You know, and my final year project, I want to keep on building that. And I really do believe that the power of storytelling can actually help inform the researchers and the scientists.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that, Michaela. I think there's, you know, not only have you impacted many of the people in your sort of online and offline communities, but it's definitely had an impact on your life in terms of the way things have evolved and the way you've sort of directed your studies and work. I don't know whether Kim's got some examples of perhaps some of the women you've been working with either recently or in recent years where you can see how their lives have really evolved.
Yeah. One of my biggest successes really from a good few years ago, 2015, we were running a magazine for young parents, as you know, and I ran a journalism course because I had 30 volunteer writers up and down the country writing for me. They were asking for more training around writing and sharing their stories as young parents. So I created my own course, and I ran it in both in Salford and Stoke-on-Trent. On the first day of my first course, I had six people. And one of them was a dad, and he had come to the course and he only wanted to write about sport. and he'd actually wanted to come to the course because he wanted to get onto an access course to go to university to do sports journalism. And he just was completely convinced he only wanted to write about sport. That's all he wanted to do. Came in dressed in his sports kit on the first day, five women. And obviously we explained who we were a magazine for young parents, etc. And he had kids, but it wasn't in dad mode. He was just in football mode. And I said, like, the first module is blogging. You can write about anything. And these ladies put their hand up and they said, I want to write about domestic abuse. And it was not a subject I was expecting or prepared for at all. But I was, this is an open classroom. You can write about anything. We can talk about anything in here. And everything we say in here stays in here, except when we write about it, because obviously then it gets published. Out of six people, those two ladies had experience of domestic violence. And actually, Jamie, he went from just wanting to write about sport to doing all our other modules, which was like news writing, interviewing, etc. And he interviewed the only men's charity for survivors of male domestic abuse sufferers. So he completely changed over the course of the 6 weeks. And then he went on and did his access course and he graduated and he's now a sports journalist. But just seeing the change in him was just amazing. And I know that's not a woman example, but I always think of him as my sort of my little success story. In terms of boobs, again,
anyone who's listening and thinking, what is boobs?
Yeah.
You might need to say what
that is. Yeah. So boobs is Be Open on Breastfeeding Salford. It's a breastfeeding project that started again in 2015 as a result of me doing some research into breastfeeding rates, because Salford's breastfeeding rates were really, really low at the time. And there's several different issues going on that are still going on in Salford around breastfeeding. And one of the key things that keeps cropping up again and again and again is the time for healthcare professionals to listen to mums and to give them that time to support them and find out what it is they actually want and need around what issues they're having.
So how are the women being impacted, you know, how they're life changing through the support that you're offering there?
Yeah, so the fact that our volunteer peer supporters are giving not just 10 minutes like a health visitor can, but actually up to an hour and a half sometimes for a one-to-one appointment, and that just gives them the confidence just to go away and change. And sometimes it's like a little tiny little tweak with the position and attachment of the baby on their breast, and just like
for something that's meant to be the most natural thing in the world, actually it's pretty damn difficult for a lot of people.
That's part of our whole project, because it's definitely not easy. It's a skill that you need to learn and you need to be prepared for, and once you know how it works, that then gives you the power.
Just thinking, Kim, how many women have you supported, you think, now over the years through boobs?
Well, so we started peer support in April 2019, and we supported 120 women face-to-face last year. So over the last 5 years, we've supported like 200 and something women each year.
I might come to Jasmine just to hear. We're talking obviously about experiences that, I guess, how lives are sort of changing.
Yeah, I've got many, but I would like to speak about two of them. I met one, she was like zero, going to negative zero situation. And one, she was in a middle situation by going down to zero. So the zero one, that lady, she was coming from domestic abuse relationship. She was just moved from, I think it was Liverpool to here. And she didn't know anybody. So I met her before I opened my organization. So I start helping her wherever I can. And then we lost each other. And then when I opened, I met her again. And then I said to her, come, I will be doing this and this. It will be good to you. So she joined. This woman, when I met her, she could even talk, even if I'm sitting next to her. I have to lean into her for her to speak up, because she wasn't allowed to raise her voice. She wasn't allowed to go outside, even out in the garden. As we walk out, she had so much. This is the woman, she was coming. She was working as a engineering, going all the way down to a point that she can't even talk. So after working together, and she started open up, she started open up with her passion, what she likes to do. Obviously, she can't go back to the to work again, because then with the kids and everything. So I developed her with what she loves to do, which was cooking. And now she's the loudest person in my group I ever met. Oh. She's already opening her own catering, which is she's doing from home.
your transformation.
Very.
Did you say there was somebody else you wanted to highlight as well?
Yeah, the other person that I met, she started her own business, and that business she was in is quite male dominated. So she was quite pushed back on every time. So she was quite tired of fighting to stay in that industrial thing. So she was just like, I'm giving up. And I say, no, if you've been there, if you've already put your foot inside there, that means you can still stay there. So let's work together and see what we're going to do. Then I support her, I help her. Now she's got so many, she's already opening her own kitchen cleaning industrial that goes all the way in Manchester. She's got so many contracts for housing, all the way to Liverpool, Leeds and Wigan. She's doing very, very well. And as I said before, the partners are the ones that are letting us so down. So she was going back home complaining that, oh, this is happening. I told you that is a male business. Why you keep yourself going fighting for it?
So, and I guess in having supported women like this, they can then act as the next generation of role models. Is one of the things we said was lacking, was we're doing podcasts like this to show, you know, people are still operating and still getting on with things during lockdown in many ways, when, you know, there's a lot of things that have had to come to a standstill. Last but not least there, Heather, in your years of experience and all the work that you've done, there must be many people who've benefited through the support and, you know, peer support that you've been offering. Tell us more.
There's two. I'll talk about the fathers and then I'll talk about the asthma work, which is more recent. The thing that I see since 2013, really, is fathers going into employment. That's what I really want to see. You know, we have a social return on investment that you can access through Unlimited Potential's website, unlimitedpotential.org.uk. The fathers want to be useful members of society. They also gained mutual support. The SROI is between 1 to 14 to 1 to 20. So basically, for every £1 invested, you might get as much as £20 back of social value. This was about the link between the fathers and the child's well-being. So we need to look at what happened to the children. And the children's well-being also improved because basically when you've got a happy and confident father in the home, then that changes the whole mood in the household. And some of the children themselves reported that their fathers, when they entered the project in Little Houlton, their fathers changed in 3 weeks. The children, obviously, I know them now. Yeah, I don't believe in projects. I think projectitis is an evil. But I stay in contact, as my mentor told me, with the communities that I work with, and Little Houlton's very close to me. And to see those children grow up into confident young people who have a level of resilience is the most important thing. For the community, particularly for the community of Little Houlton, who'd never seen any examples of positive fatherhood. Well, not some of them told me that, not all of them, because Little Houlton's quite diverse. But for the community, the children said, one of the children said that it was about like throwing a stone into a pond, and the fathers coming together as Salford Dads Little Houlton, that vision of that positive fatherhood rippled right the way through. These are the things I'm most proud of those fathers about.
What happened there? What about the asthma side of things?
Well, the asthma side, I started because I was working in Winton on a project called Eccles Together in Health. That's on YouTube if you want to have a look at it. And we started doing asthma parties, which are group consultations for children with asthma. From there, I ended up meeting a little girl called Ella. I have asthma. My childhood was terrible. That affected my confidence. It affected my levels of anxiety. I may appear to you quite confident. This is an act that I'm giving you now. Ella has anxieties. She reminded me of me. But one of the things that her grandmother showed me was that she was a lovely, lovely singer. And when she sang, her asthma symptoms got better. And then I met a woman called Carol Liddell, and she is the founder of Wigan Warblers, which is a singing group for adults with chronic lung disease. And after a year, after a year of singing, Carol went to Withenshaw Hospital to have a lung function measured. And her lung function had improved so much that she had to put up, she could put off her lung transplant. And Ella and Carol inspired me to start some projects around singing for lung health for children. We started a little group in Little Hulton Library with 4-6 families. And then the academic evaluation from the University of Salford, which again you can download from Unlimited Potential's website, is that the children after 9 months were coughing less, they used fewer inhalers, they slept better. And then we did a whole school approach at St Paul Peel Primary School in Little Hulton. And we worked with the choir in particular, but also the whole school. And some of the children in the choir said that singing was life-changing for them. It gave them confidence and it gave them friendships. I've worked nationally on some of this stuff and I just summarise it in 3 C's. And those 3 C's are to improve their well-being. People need to have control over the circumstances of their own lives, and many of them don't. It's chaos for them, especially for those who are experiencing disadvantage. Meaningful social contact, we know this now in the middle of lockdown, having people that you can rely on, and confidence. I mean, what's coming through in this discussion is how working with some of us in various ways gives people the confidence to change their own lives.
Kim, yeah. You want to say something there?
Yeah, I've got the perfect example of that as well. Like on my course again, Roberta, who she came on my course, she's not a mom, but she's been an Italian journalist for 20 years, had come to England and was just completely lost, and she didn't have any confidence in herself whatsoever. And she came on my course, and the reason she came on my really, really basic journalism course was because she said, I'm a journalist, but I can't do it in English. And I said, you really can. You know all these skills. So we did news writing, we did blogging, we did interviewing. All she needed me to do was check her grammar and just give her some tips, and she's now a journalist.
I know. I mean, we've got examples like that in Florida. I can think of sort of Tamara, who's on our Time to Grow program at the moment. Fantastic holistic therapist, but all of her qualifications are written in Romanian. So through our pop-up spa work, we were able to get her re-qualified. She's now doing complementary therapies, and we're able to employ her in other ways. And we could give all sorts of examples really at Flourish, but the one that was coming to mind was one in one of our recent podcasts, in our Income Generation podcast we've just done. Kelly, who you might have met from Heart, she'd grown up experiencing domestic abuse at home, and she'd seen how a lot of the programs that were out there, because she then experienced domestic abuse as an adult, she recognized that a lot of the supports that's out there for the adults and for the women in particular, and that there wasn't support programs like the Freedom Program for children, and a lot of children were not getting the emotional support, the time to talk, or the understanding that they perhaps needed to have time to think about with what was going on. So she's developed programs for children basically in mainly primary and secondary schools to help children also deal with sort of domestic abuse situations. And she came to us the other year, and it was interesting hearing back on the podcast, because through coming to us it helped her build her skills to be able to grow a business. We put her in touch with a mentor, and that massively boosted her sort of confidence to be able to quit her job and build up her contracts. And so she's now working full-time in Heart.
Thanks, ladies. Wow, some really useful stuff already. Can't wait for part 2 later on in the episode. Now, a really inspirational journey of a woman whose own mental and physical well-being spurred her to carve out a new business and way of life. Here's the gorgeous Natasha Anand-Bujiharwan from Your Earth Clinic talking to producer Vic about her social enterprise. She also shares loads of great advice for staying healthy through challenging times. I promise you'll feel enlightened after this.
So thank you so much for having me on the show. It's really an honour and a privilege to be here. I absolutely love this community and this tribe. It's so important to me. And I love sharing, so it's really wonderful to be here. I am Natasha Anand-Bujiharwan, and I am the co-founder of a social enterprise called Union Street Media Arch, which was set up around about 12 years ago by my husband, Roop Sagar, and myself. And through our journey of personal growth and evolution, of having our ear to the ground and our finger on the pulse, working on the front line in the community, we also set up, apart from Union Street, which is a digital media agency and a creative social development organization working for young people, with young people and also other marginalized groups of people. We also set up Earth Clinic, which is a holistic wellness practice where we have various therapies on offer to the public, as well as workshops, online courses, and teacher training programs.
I love it. So what motivated you to develop your Earth Clinic?
Wow. Okay. Yeah, this is a big one for us. So we had been working in the social enterprise voluntary sector for many, many years. And you know what it's like really putting absolutely everything into the work that we do. You know, many of us who are working in this sector are people who ourselves, you know, a lot of us have been through adversity. We've been through the struggles. We've had challenges in life. It was very much part of the motivation of me to set up the social enterprise. And it just took everything from me. And I didn't really know, I guess, I didn't really understand the consequences of working in the way that I was working. And I didn't understand how giving myself wholly and completely in that way was going to end up. And so years later, I ended up starting to really burn out, and a lot of things came together at once. It wasn't just my physical health that started to really suffer, but it was also my mental health, my emotional health, and something had to change, something had to give. And it was through that journey that I then realized just how important health and well-being was, not just to me and not just to my community, but to the survival of this work that we do. And so Earth Clinic was born. And so my husband and I, we moved our work into being more therapeutic. So out the work that we would deliver on the ground, the projects that we do, we all had a therapeutic element. And then slowly setting up the clinic, that came about as we ourselves started to train in various holistic modalities. We started off training in coaching and then in energy work. And then I went off and trained in naturopathy, nutritional therapy. I trained as a psychotherapist and a yoga teacher. All of these modalities we bring together under the banner of Earth Clinic.
What's energy work?
I'm so glad you asked me that question, because it really is the foundation of everything here at Earth Clinic. Energy work is the practice of different energy, different modalities that work on the different energetic layers of the body. It recognizes that we are fundamentally energy beings. We are made of physical matter, and physical matter, you know, is atoms and molecules at that fundamental level, and going further, smaller and smaller particles that vibrate. And in between the particles that vibrate, you have energy, you have that empty space and the energy flows. When we work with energy, we have this different opportunity to really revitalize, re-energize, recuperate our physical body, our mind, our emotional state also. And this for us is the missing dimension in health and well-being.
Interesting. What I think is really interesting, Natasha, is that you had the courage to not only stop the way of life that you'd become accustomed to, but also not made you very well, but you embarked on something completely new. How was that process for you?
I really had no choice. I got to the rock bottom point where I couldn't leave my bed for weeks on end. I felt so awful and I felt hopeless and I was at a loss of what to do. I'd been to the doctor, I'd been pushed from pillar to post. I just didn't know what to do. And so the only thing that I could do was take matters into my own hand. And that's really what gave me the motivation to do this. I guess I'm also one of those people that has to reach rock bottom before I do something about it. It was a part of my personality, and I would like to say that that's changed now. But I feel that a lot of us are like that, and it's just a part of that human journey. Sometimes we are really stuck in a way of being, or we're conditioned with this old way of thinking, and we have forgotten that we really can take this power back into our own hands. And so we need a big slap on the wrist, or we need to really hit a brick wall that inspires us to really take back that power and take control of our own health.
Can you believe now, doing what you do now with your Earth Clinic, can you believe that you're the same person that was that, had that way of life?
You know, I talk about it all the time with friends and with family, because they laugh and they say, wow, I can't believe the transformation that you've made, and remember how you used to be. You know, it wasn't just the crazy working hours and giving everything. You know, I also, my lifestyle wasn't as desirable as it is now. You know, I was drinking a lot. I was, you know, was burning the candles at both ends. I was also, like, my mind was engaged in a lot of unnecessary activity and behavior. And you know, I was very, very different. And I can't believe how things have ended up now. And at the same time, the true essence of who I really am has always remained. It's just that that true essence is now able to shine more and has the center stage of me. And those other parts of me that were seeking something, or trying to, you know, numb something or mask something, or whatever, those other parts of me are more relaxed now. And this has been a journey. It's not that, you know, one day I woke up and realized that things had to change, and then that was it. I suddenly stabilized into this really fantastic way of being there for myself. It's taken 8 years to this point to really learn how to prioritize myself. And I see it as an act of devotion. You know, I think often we can devote ourselves to other things, to even material possessions. But fundamentally, we're here as beings to really just be us and devote our time to us. But it's a journey. And we shouldn't be so hard on ourselves, because we're always moving forward, even when it seems like we're moving backwards.
The voluntary sector and social enterprise sector as well, everyone's always overwhelmingly busy, and even more so nowadays. And I've seen it lots, and actually I've been one of these people who have put my passions and my community and my beneficiaries before my own health. Like, I really burnt out a couple of years ago. And we've heard from your experiences of being absolutely burnt out. Do you have any tips how to get through that, or how to maybe avoid that?
Yeah, I do. I am really, really, really passionate about inspiring a new way for us to all think through the very point that you're bringing forward here. And I think it's one of the most important things for the survival of the sector, for the survival of a lot of the work that we do that cross cuts and connects in with the wider economy also. So the fundamental premise is that we don't necessarily have any more time or resources to put into tackling or solving the problems or tackling the challenges that we face as humanity. We've got to be more savvy. We've got to be more effective at the work that we do. We've got to find the shortcuts, and we've got to be able to get better results quicker, because actually challenges are increasing. The amount of people suffering is increasing. You know, we're now feeling the cuts in the spending cuts that 10 years ago were coming into play. We're now really feeling the effects of those. And just to throw in a global pandemic as well at the same time. So my thing is, well, how do we work more effectively? How can we work more effectively given less time and less resources? So for me, it's about bringing the cutting edge technologies and modalities that are evidence-based, that are tried and tested, that can be integrated with other ways of working, other therapies, other types of interaction, in order to create deeper, faster, longer lasting impacts and outcomes on our health and well-being.
Interesting. Give me some examples of those.
A couple of years ago, we came to the end of a 3-year program that was government funded, and it was a creative employment skills program that we did through Union Street. So just to give an example, we would focus. So it was a creative employment program, but rather than just launching straight into these are all the skills that we need to build in order to get a job in the creative industries, we actually spent the first 10 days focusing on our personal development. So we didn't even start to look at technical skills. We didn't look at any of that stuff until we really drilled down into where we were at, what was up for us, what were the key challenges that we were facing in our lives, not just to do with work and skills, but the other factors that are preventing us from fully being in it. You know, we may be carers for parents at home. We may have chronic health conditions. We really focused on giving our participants the opportunity to have this 360-degree view of their whole life so that they could start to holistically look at where they are, what they needed to get to that dream job. And for some people had never even done that. They'd never even stopped to consider their own state of mental and emotional well-being and had never even been asked, like, what's life like for you? You know, if you're a carer, then how do you put aside time for yourself and your own growth? Just asking ourselves really key fundamental questions. All of that paved the way and created the foundation to then do the technical work. So it's like we're saying, you know, for us to really be in the economy and to be a proper functioning member of the economy, we need to recognize that we are humans, and it's our health and well-being that's going to prevent us from actually fully entering the job market. That was 3 years ago. What we're doing now is much more bolshy than that, but it really created a long-lasting impact. And I still see these people today doing incredible things in the creative industry.
During this time, and you're the expert here, and people will be listening to this as we reach probably like the 5th or 6th week of lockdown in the UK. Do you have any advice? How are you coping?
Yeah, absolutely. I am being asked this question on a daily basis.
Oh, really?
I have a live stream that I do on my Instagram and my Facebook every day. I'm being asked so many questions around this. So I believe that everything happens for a reason. And I really do think that one of the reasons why lockdown is here is to really force us to look at our own state of mental well-being and emotional health. So we have a silver lining here. We have an opportunity to utilize this time to really go inwards and to look at, on a deeper level, as to where we are with our own health and well-being. So on one hand, it's like the very situation of lockdown in itself is the treasure trove that we're going to glean all of this treasure from, you know, which is going to be our treasure moving forward. This is what we're going to be able to draw upon and remember that time where we really overcame this incredible situation. But also we're going to learn so much about ourselves from having to really face ourselves. And then the second thing I want to say is actually in response to what you asked, which is how can we actually navigate these times? I feel, first of all, one of the most important things to do is to be very careful with what external source of information we engage with, particularly the news. Certain news streams, I feel, are very fear-based. Also, sometimes on social media, there can be threads of conversations and even arguments happening between people, which can be very fear-based. And I think there's a lot out there which we may not realize is getting into our psyche and creating fear and insecurity within us. I think it's important to start to examine that and to just notice, what are we allowing into our field of consciousness through these different channels, and really, how are they making us feel? Because if they're not making us feel good, do we really need to be watching them? we can still get information from other sources. We can still read what we need to read. We don't necessarily need to be bombarded with information. So, and what kind of conversations they're having with people. You know, sometimes you can feel that conversation going into a doom and gloom place or gossipy or becoming very kind of a downward spiral. Those also are the kinds of conversations that maybe aren't helpful to our mental health. So we can make those kind of choices. One of my other top tips is to practice presence. So often when we are feeling overwhelmed or we're feeling anxious or whatever it is, anger may be coming up or doubt or insecurity, for many of us, our default setting is just to try and push past it or to push it away. So the idea is that if I just distract myself or get on with it, then it'll go away. In the short term, that might be helpful, but in the long term, that causes really massive repercussions for our internal world, because what we're actually saying to aspects of ourselves, we're saying to our mind and our emotions that you're not important and you need to step aside so that I can just get on with my day. So what's really helpful is for us to be present with whatever's coming up. So if we feel anger, if we feel anxiety coming up, is to actually embrace that, allow those feelings to be there and meet them and practice meeting them, because the more we do that, it gets easier. It's not as uncomfortable or discomforting as time goes on, as we are able to meet ourselves and be present with these aspects of ourselves. And then in time, it becomes easy to watch anxiety arise or see that the anger there or whatever it is, and simply be able to observe it and not become so engulfed and overwhelmed with it. A really big part of that, recognizing how the mind works, is recognizing that we are not the mind. The mind is a part of us, but it's not the whole of us. That who I am is Natasha, is soul. My soul energy is what I am, is the true essence of what I am. And my mind is a part of me. So when my mind is getting angry or my mind is getting overwhelmed, I don't need to jump in with it. I can learn to sort of almost create a bit of distance between myself and my mind. And in time, that helps us to be more present with what's coming up, to not have to push it away or negate it, to be okay with what's coming up. And ultimately, to create more stability and safety and trust in our internal world.
Oh, I love all that. And I'm feeling more positive just listening to you, Natasha. Talked about energy again, so we've come full circle in this conversation. It's been so lovely to hear from you. Can you tell me where we can find more information about your Earth Clinic, and also the details on how we can log on to your daily briefings?
Yeah, sure. I would absolutely love anybody out there that feels connected to me or what I'm saying to get in touch. Absolutely. So there are a number of ways. The Facebook group that I run is called Holistic Health and Wellness Community. You can find the group attached to our Facebook page, which is Your Earth Clinic. And also I have my own personal Facebook page, which is Natasha Anand. Every morning, except for Sunday, of course, at 11:08, I do my daily briefings. I love how you've called them daily briefings. And they go out to Instagram Live as well. We have also just launched a brand new website, yourearthschool.co.uk is the school branch. And we have the clinic, which is yourearthclinic.co.uk. So we now have the two sort of aspects of our offer. We have the clinic where you can come and you can get therapy. And we have the school where you can come and do classes or also be involved in our teacher training programs. And we actually have a couple of really wonderful opportunities. We have a free course right now, which, you know, is something that our tribe asked us to put together. It's called Protect Your Mind, Body, and Energy Fields. It's a short, free course where anybody can access from our Your Earth School www.women.co.uk website or from our Facebook page. And we also have a new online course for people who are working in the holistic field or in the youth and community work field to develop their own self-care and self-practice and professional practice. So we have those two beautiful offers at the moment.
Oh, sounds so good. Thank you very much for spending half an hour with me.
You are so welcome. I have really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for being in touch, and it's an honour to be involved in this podcast.
Thanks, Vic, and thanks, Natasha. I really love Natasha's honesty and how she combines the mental, physical, and spiritual aspects of well-being and provides a simple way to make holistic health accessible and understandable.
I think Natasha has just highlighted how important self-care is, especially in these challenging times when there is so much overwhelm and fear. Ideally, we want to get to this point of self-realisation without burnout and start to create more of a balance. But we know that that's not always easy, especially as female entrepreneurs. You're already juggling so many plates, but hopefully this podcast will give you some inspiration on how you can get started. Next, we've got the final half of our energetic panel discussion with our incredible Salford organisations.
I did touch on the fact before that, you know, as women in our own right, managing, juggling life and juggling businesses and having these social causes and a social purpose that perhaps goes above and beyond what what is expected of us sometimes, there's a potential there for us all to be at risk of not managing and not looking after our own health and well-being. And I just was just going to perhaps end on that, really, partly as you know, get people's thoughts and reflections on that. And is it a problem? Do we manage it well? Do we not manage it well? First of all, is burnout an issue for people, let alone women in this sector?
I think because a lot of people are really passionate about what they do. They give 110%. And I mean, I'm terrible for it. I will push myself, even if I'm ill or whatever, I will still push myself 110%. And it gets to the point where you're completely burnt out. So instead of kind of just taking it at a pace, you decide like you're going to climb Mount Everest and go for it. But I've learned sometimes you just need to down tools and take a break.
You were gardening, thankfully, the other day, I heard.
Oh, yeah, I've decided to do a fairy garden. It's actually a wildlife garden. As you know, I've got a five-year-old daughter that's crazy about fairies. So we're doing a part of the garden where we're going to just grow wildflowers, and we're going to have a go at actually making some little fairy ornaments and things like that. So that's kind of a little project we've got going on for us. So it's like something I can do with Amelia. And we've got the time at the moment because we're not really going anywhere. Try and find something away from what you're doing, a bit of downtime, because you'll just get wrapped up in it completely. And I mean, I'm terrible for it. I'm the worst one.
I think we could all say that. Jasmine, you look like you're going to
speak. Yeah, as Michaela say that because we do what we love, so you forget that you are doing a job. Mm-hmm. You just do like that, I'm supposed to do this because I love this. And then at the end, you just end up like you forgot yourself, you forgot to do everything about yourself or your kids. So to me, this lockdown, it teach me a lot. In a way that I didn't want to come, but it teach me a lot because 24/7 I'm with my kids. So before it was like I can only have that time only on Saturday, but Monday to Friday I'm quite busy with what I'm doing, running around, just drop them school, bring home, and okay, you go with your stuff, I'm going with my stuff. But now I do like 20 or 30% of work, then 30% of me with my kids, do something in the garden or just
having lunch together, you know, it's nice. We'll have had months of just being able to have lunch. I don't take a lunch break.
Exactly.
So I'm having lunch with myself.
Yeah, today. Just sitting with them. Yeah, and then other time that I'll say, okay, you can play with your games and everything, and I'll just be in my room with my tele watching wherever I want. So, yeah, we do.
Giving each other some space.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So we do need to get sometimes for ourselves, which is quite hard. I experienced that is quite hard, especially when you're running around and everything. It's quite hard to think that, oh, I didn't take myself for time for myself this week or for my family this week. Yeah.
There are some sacrifices that we do make, for sure. Kim, what were you going to say?
Yeah.
Like last week, on the first week of my COVID project, I burnt my lunch because I'd put it in my oven. I put it in the oven. It was even worse. It was actually cold at the end of it because I put it in the oven, running around, doing looking after my volunteers and all sorts. Completely forgot about it. My other half didn't notice that it was in the oven or couldn't smell it. just playing his game. So completely forgot about it. Got into the kitchen at 3 o'clock and went, oh my God, my lunch. Turn the oven off. And then left the kitchen and then completely forgot about it again. 2 hours later, there I was, like really tired, really stressed, wondering why I was tired and stressed. And Adam went, you haven't eaten anything, have you? And I said, oh my God, my lunch that was burnt. It was
a day. You need a day or two off, Kim, by the sounds of it.
This week has been much slower. The two things I would say was when you're feeling at the edge of overwhelm, do a brain dump. And that was something that I learned. Just get everything that's straight from your brain that's bugging you or worrying you or that you're constantly thinking about when your mind just doesn't shut up. Just put it down on paper in any form and then you can decide whether you want to do something to it, make it into a to-do list or prioritize three things out of that brain dump, then take a break. That's what I do. If I can't sleep as well, put Headspace on for sleeping. Oh yeah, and yeah, you need a team. That's what I can't do it on your own. I spent 4 years of trying to do stuff on my own, and it wasn't until 2 years ago when I found Rachel that I realized how much it means to have someone else in your team who just gets you and just knows what needs to be done and sort of the opposite of you. So I'm the big ideas person and she's the we're both doers, but she's the small details, I'm the big ideas. So I get the big ideas out there and she says, right, this is what we need to do it.
To get some balance is as effective as you know, helping your health and well-being for sure. Last but not least, Heather.
Like many of the ladies here, I'm mostly fueled by passion bordering on anger, mainly about the have-nots, you know, the underdog. They're my passion and I will go on and on and on and on. So all of those tips from the other ladies are just great. But I want to talk to those people who, on the entrepreneurship scale, are the inventors, the ones who dream things up, the ones who believe that life could be different if only we did this. And for me, as a clinician who doesn't do much clinical stuff anymore, I do a social approach to wellbeing. So for those of you who are entrepreneurs in the making or are entrepreneurs, the thing that I learned was that some of the things that I see or we see that are in the future, actually they can take between 5 to 10 years before other people will see what I see. And, you know, I spend a lot of time talking to people like NHS England and Public Health England and various nursing organisations, and it churns me up inside sometimes that they don't see what happens on the streets of Little Halton and understand why these things happen and how different approaches can make a difference. And I have to learn to A, have patience, B, have a mentor that I can talk to that understands, who's been there before me, possibly going through the same things as me. Every now and again, I'll ring her up and I'll say, you'll never guess. And she'll say, yeah, I've had that before. And this is how you manage it or think about this. And I think Kim's right about asking for help. I know I've got to do it, maybe even have founder syndrome. So you think you're the only one that can possibly handle this, and you really are not. I've got two co-directors now. I've got a load of nurses who try out my various harebrained schemes. I have a list of positive actions here on my computer, and also to recognize your imposter syndrome. We all have imposter syndrome. I'm not that good after all. And to recognize the things that I've done, my achievements, I try and pin things up to remind me that actually I'm not mad. I'm not crazy. We can have an approach to well-being beyond medicine. I think the lockdown's taught us that.
Brilliant. Well, that's a great point to end on there, I think, really. I know, thank you for sharing all your sort of experiences there on different people you've been working with, ideas for things, ways in which you've connected with Flourish, and, you know, different tips there on how to manage the madness, so to speak, be that in lockdown or be that in general when we're running our social ventures. So on that point, I will just say thank you very much. Thanks, ladies. You can find links to all of the organisations involved in that discussion in our show notes. It was great to connect with you all online and let off some steam, as well as help you guys from Salford get to know each other. and it's good to know the magic of the Flourish Network still continues as we quickly adapt to the new normal. Salford CVS have kindly invested in some health and wellbeing activities, including this podcast. We're looking forward to running some more online events and conversations over the coming months.
And finally is Flourish Talks. We've invited some incredible ladies from our network to give you some top tips on staying the best you can be during these and other challenging times.
Hello, my name is Rachel and I'm the founder and co-director of Plastic Shed, a social enterprise based in Stockport that brings people together from all walks of life to help turn our plastic waste into new useful things. So the situation due to coronavirus is having a big impact on our mental health right now for a huge number of reasons. It's making us feel stressed or useless, all sorts of emotions that aren't good for our health. And there's lots of research that shows how these feelings can seriously harm us if they continue. We're saying that we need to protect the NHS. This includes helping each other to take care of our well-being so that we are less dependent on specialist support. So one of the ways we're helping people to take care of their well-being is through creativity and play and providing a sense of purpose. We've created simple tutorials for people to learn how to turn plastic waste into something useful again at home. So far we've shown people how to turn plastic like loo roll packaging and baked bean wraps into sheets of material that feels like leather. And then people can use that to make wallets or laptop cases or school bags. And I say it's about creativity and play because it's just as much about experimenting with and exploring plastic as a material as it is about creating something new from it. Research shows that being creative and allowing time for play provides so many benefits to our health and well-being. And it's not about making something perfect or beautiful. It's about thinking differently and using your imagination. There's actually research that has shown that wounds heal quicker when you're doing something creative. You get into this flow, which is quite meditative and calming. You're heightening your senses and becoming much more aware as you touch the materials and hear how the different plastics sound as you squeeze them, and as you start to forget that you're holding a loo roll bag in your hands and start focusing on how flexible or stretchy and strong it is, your mind starts buzzing with ideas and you're stimulating a different part of your brain. Then as you've used that plastic to make something or discovered something new, you feel a sense of achievement or a sense of wonder. But you also feel part of something bigger. You're playing your part in tackling this huge problem of plastic waste. Having that self-worth and sense of purpose is so important for our confidence and self-esteem. It's a very cyclical thing as well, because once you spark that creativity and playful mindset, it's proven that you become more open-minded and you look at things differently. So maybe you'll be like, oh, I could use that plastic to make this now, or maybe even see the lockdown in a new way that might make you feel a bit better about it. So it's quite empowering to take the time to get creative and play and experiment. So our top tips for your health and well-being, definitely have a play. The classic thing for people to say is, oh, I'm not creative, I'd be rubbish at that. Play isn't so much associated with needing to be skilled or talented. Really, being creative and being playful are very much the same, but looking at something as a chance to play and experiment might make you more inclined to have a go and less frustrated with yourself if things go a bit differently to the tutorial you're following. And then keep things simple. So reduce that first step right down to something you can really fit in with your life right now. So maybe that first step is, you know what, over the next few days, I'm going to keep an eye out for the plastic around the house that I could use. Looking at plastic in a new way is still really good for your mental health and is a great first step in reducing the amount we waste. And then invite others to join in, because that's a nice feeling both ways, isn't it? When you say to someone, I saw this and I thought of you. They know someone's been thinking about them, and then you feel good about making someone else feel good. And then share what you've made with us at Plastic Shed, and we'll definitely be so glad to see it.
So I'm Barbara Lewis. I cared for my own mum when she had dementia. I came back from New Zealand because she was ill and my sister wasn't coping on her own. So between us, we kept her at home. The last thing she ever wanted to do was go into a care home. So there were problems that we had, and there were always, there were lots of benchmarks. We kept saying, oh, once it gets to this stage, we can't carry on, we can't carry on. But actually, we're problem solvers, the two of us, and we actually solved problems as we went along. One of the main things, major things, was showering, because she obviously needed help showering. But we wanted to maintain her dignity, and she was beginning to fight us a bit, even though we covered her with towels, etc. And it's actually a common problem with people with dementia, because they can't actually speak very well, tell you exactly what the problem is. So I designed just an item of clothing that just very, very simple, and just went over her while she was being showered. It was my other sister sort of said to me, what you need is one of those things that nuns bathe in. And the fashion buyer in me got going and started thinking, right, okay, what do we design? And it's a very, very simple item that simply lies over her. You wash through it, wash under it, wash round it. You can soap it up. You just leave it on. But it meant she wasn't naked. And she stopped objecting. I couldn't believe the difference. So I then went on to design a towel in the same sort of thing. And I've actually just rebranded it as the Never Naked System. And then I also designed other things. My background is fashion, is textiles and fashion, yeah. I've done 20 years in fashion buying. Because I've done all the business of, you know, I want people to buy things because they're things to buy. What I'm trying to do is ask people to buy them because they are needed. I don't want, it needs to be a commercial thing, but I saw the difference it made. I've seen people using them and writing back to me and saying, thank you so much for designing this and thinking this through. It's given my mother dignity, or it's given my father dignity, because it's both ways.
And how things been going for you? And have you got any observations, obviously, in the current climate of lockdown and with COVID-19? I think I've seen you adapting your skills again there to...
I have, yes. The first thing that went through my mind, actually, was that carers were going to have more problems, because if at home, people looking after their loved ones at home would be going to be more difficult for them. So what I was saying was, look, if you're having more problems, consider using the shower drapes and the other products that I've got. But actually then what happened was, my daughter works on the ambulances, and she was talking about how she, because she doesn't live with us, she had to get into her household whilst having been dealing with COVID patients. She needed to get in there clean, so she was taking her clean clothes to work. I saw somebody making wash bags on the internet, and actually I looked at them, and in fact they weren't big enough, they were little. So I just got my brain going again, my design skills, and I used the fabrics that I already use, because I know they'll wash at high temperatures, the ones I use for my dining draperons, and I've made very big and fun looking wash bags. But she saw them and she showed her crewmates, and they all went, oh my god, I want one. I've made loads of them, and I was actually giving them away for free, but they said, no, you can't do that. So they insisted on paying. So what I've done, I've basically done them at cost, because I feel guilty.
How do you switch off from mental health?
I do try to make sure that I make me time. In the mornings, I try and do sort of 10, 20 minutes of yoga these days. Just sort of start the day off. Nice deep breath, all that sort of thing. So that does me good. And I sing. I'm a singer. Actually, it does release everything for me. So I make sure. At the moment, I can't go to choirs, but I sing at home anyway. I do my own exercises and things like that. So that always keeps me going, always has done. And the third thing really is actually family. I didn't set this business up to make loads of money. I made it, the whole concept came from family. So what I don't want to do is work every hour God sends at the expense of my family. I make sure that actually, in a way, business takes a backseat. That perhaps isn't always the best thing, but you know, I always make sure it's a case of, you know, like, as I say, my son and grandson are living here at the minute. Okay, I'm sorry, that is actually more, at the end of the day, it is more important, and I make time for them whilst trying to fit in business as well. So if you want to know more about it, I've set up a website called www.limonattire.com. that's spelt L-I-M-O-N. It's quite a strange name in some ways, but yeah.
Hi, I'm Karen, and I run Brain Health Breakthrough CIC. I set up this because I believe in empowering others to feel valued by creating volunteer opportunities and peer-led support groups for people with brain injury experience. And through a unique mindfulness and well-being model, we also offer support to unpaid carers to help them navigate their way to effectively deal with the challenges of COVID-19 and build strong, resilient communities. My tips for health and well-being is to let go of plans and expectations you had of yourself and recognise we have a lot to process and deal with in this current time. And it's never been so important to spend extra time looking after you, nurturing and revitalising your own health and well-being.
Hello, I'm Emma from Calm Connections, and we are a company that works with the whole family to support emotional well-being and good mental health. We work with families in a variety of ways, by providing one-to-one support through family coaching and mindfulness sessions. We run workshops and programmes such as our Calm Families course, and actually we're just in the process at the moment of putting some family mindfulness and episodes of our Finding the Balance series online. The Finding the Balance series is something that we've done around homeschooling and homeworking in our particular situation. So we recognise the importance of supporting parents and significant caregivers when families are experiencing challenging times. We offer support via our parent care and mentor scheme and run regular support groups which are online, and we have a closed Facebook group that offers a listening ear and compassion 7 days a week. My top tips for staying emotionally and mentally well during challenging times are definitely to be kind to yourself and recognise that you're doing the best that you can with what you know and what you've got. I personally like to get myself into nature when I can, which is a bit of a challenge because I live in a flat. And I practice aspects of mindfulness, usually by taking a couple of big breaths and feeling grateful for what I've got, no matter how small that is. I think the most important thing that I would like to say is don't suffer in silence. There's the old saying, a problem shared is a problem halved. And there honestly are so many parents and carers out there who really understand the challenges of raising a family. And I think there are more of us finding ourselves in that place within the present situation. So I'd like to just say, take care of yourselves and stay safe.
Thanks, ladies. And again, all the links to these organisations are now in the show notes. I think at least 9 women changemakers have been featured in this episode, so lots of inspiration.
That's it for this month's Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. Do you have any health and wellbeing tips to share? Connect with us on Twitter. You can find us at FlourishCIC. If you're loving what you're hearing and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a review. Or if you're listening elsewhere, do share your thoughts and ideas on social media and tag us in.
You can also find out more about us and what we do, or just drop us a line the old-fashioned way at flourishtogether.org.uk. I just wanted to also mention about our online events. If you look us up at Flourish Together Manchester Eventbrite, you'll see that we've got a range of peer learning events and fundraising events online that you can get involved with. We look forward to seeing you with our next episode, which is all about problem solving in communities and social change organisations. It's out on the 1st of June.
Supporting Women in Social Enterprise is a Mike Media production.